Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. I'm really excited to welcome our next guest on the show in our physician fireside chat segment. He is one of the most successful physician entrepreneurs in the country, and he wants to share his expertise to help you achieve financial freedom. Let's talk about who this gentleman is. He is the founder. He is the CEO of the Hand Center of Louisiana. He has an ambulatory practice based in New Orleans. He's the CEO of Omega Hospital and chairman of the East Jefferson Ambulatory Surgical Center. If that's not enough, he is the founder and CEO of ERG Enterprises, and he is having a book come out that is called Ditch the Me Mindset and Change the World, which is about personal and professional philosophy about how he got to where he is today. Please help me welcome Dr. Eric George. Welcome, Dr. George.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored. I really am. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and hopefully some of my colleagues in the medical profession as well.
Absolutely. Well, it's always so fun getting to meet people and someone like yourself that's not just being a physician. You know, you're doing so many different things. So I really want to dig into that. But before we do, I would love just to know more about you and your past. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in a small town. I was born in Huntington, West Virginia. Most people remember that area where Marshall University was. That was the plane crash that occurred when I was about in the seventh or eighth grade. Wow. My father was an attorney and did some corporate law. He did coal, oil, and gas law when I was growing up, and that was a really popular area in the West Virginia coal mines and the fields there. The railroad was there. So I grew up in that town where the Marsh University was, and I stayed there through pretty much junior high school, and then went to college. And I actually ended up going to medical school at Marshall University. Mm. My family's relocated back to the Carolinas. They live in South Carolina now, but I would, you know, my years growing up were in the mountains of West Virginia, and I really loved it.
So tell me about that moment. You're in seventh grade. You hear about,
yes.
You know, what was that like? How did that influence?
Well, it was unreal. It really was. And what happened was, back in that time period, the teams that were small, like Division One, you know, Division D or Division C, they called them, the schools that didn't have the funding, like a Marshall University, what they would do is they would charter a plane. The team would sit in the front, and then the big green alumni, or whatever your alumni choice is, would sit in the back of the aircraft. And what they would do is they would all pitch in the money and go to the ball game. And so my father was involved in some of those games. He did not, luckily for me, did not attend that particular game. And they were coming home from one of the ball games. And if you've ever been to West Virginia or flown in, there's mountainous ranges everywhere. And the actual airport is in a valley between two big mountains. And they were coming in, landing, and I don't know if they had an engine failure, but the plane crashed. And of course, it was a devastating event, because not only did we lose all, and everybody's familiar with, we lost all the players and the coaching staff, but what a lot of people didn't realize, and they talk about a little bit in the movie with Michael McConaughey called We Are Marshall, is that we lost a lot of the pillars of the community, because the bank president goes and the local team physicians who are the local doctors in the town are on the plane. You know, all of the big alumni were on there. So many of my classmates, you know, when they left on Friday, had a mom and dad. And when they came home, I mean, after the crash, they came into school on Tuesday or Wednesday, they missing both. So wow. It was a really hard hit for that community. It really was. And
Do you think that that was any sort of influence on you on becoming a physician at all?
I really do. I think that part of what drove me into the medical field was seeing, you know, or knowing what had happened to a lot of those people. I think that it also, I realized that many of the people in the area needed a lot of assistance because there was not only you lose all these athletes, but there were a lot of, you know, children that were now going to be raised by their grandfather, and the community kind of took those people in. Mm. And I really saw that in medicine in that town, they had just recently, while I was there during junior high, they opened their medical school. And I think it was sponsored a lot by some of the people that had been donors for the Marshall University plane crash. So it also incentivized the medical school to be developed in the late 70s, early 80s. So yes, sir, I really do. I think it really changed things for me.
Wow. Amazing. Just amazing. And so your dad was a lawyer, and besides maybe that influence, you know, what led you to being a physician?
I think what happened was my family, my brother was an attorney and he had applied to law school. My dad was an attorney. I had relatives that were attorneys and I always had an interest in the medical side. I realized that in classes, when I started off in college, of course, I was a political science major because I was heading down the same path that my brothers and my family was, and that was to go to law school. And I even went so far, David, as to apply to law school and at West Virginia University. And I just realized this is just not for me. And I started taking in my second year of undergraduate more chemistry classes, some physics classes, organic. And I just really liked the sciences. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, maybe I could do law school with a medical bend. And the more I spent in the medicine career, the more I knew I really, really loved it. And the reading and the amount of paperwork that's involved in the legal side and wordsmith was just not my gift by any means. And I really felt like I was much more interested in caring for patients than in wordsmiths and how you write. And the truth is, I wasn't a great writer, and I thought, this is just not for me.
I can relate to that. That's me. That's me with handy stuff. You know.
Oh, really?
don't ask me to fix things. I'll break it five times before I get it together.
Well, you know what? And it's so funny because I'm 180. I was like, the last thing I want to do is read this section and try to figure out if the blue ball is going to be in a red basket or a red ball. I'd much rather fix your broken, phone or your broken clock. That's what I like. So thank goodness there's people like us, right?
Right.
Have different.
Different skills. So it's, right. It sounds like that you grew up in a loving family that was doing well for themselves. What were your experiences with money as you were growing up?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I had four brothers. I had one that's an attorney. I had one that was a fighter pilot. I had one that was in law enforcement. And in the small town of West Virginia, my father was an attorney, but, he did everything, as he said. Back then, you would do a divorce on Monday. You'd do a corporation deal on Tuesday. You'd get someone out of jail on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So he was basically the more of a Mayberry type attorney. I mean, Huntington was not a booming metropolis by any means. And so, to be fair, money was pretty tight for all of us. Mm-hmm. I would never go too far as to say, I was a poor man, because I've seen what poor people are in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I can tell you never once did I go hungry or anything like that. But I will tell you that I did a lot of odd jobs to pay for the gas in my car. I cut grass. I did some different projects. I used to fix go-karts and sell them. I mean, I cleaned pools during college, being the pool maintenance person. And so I wouldn't say we were poor by any means, but man, money was always an important matter for all of us. And we always, knew we had to get, you know, make the payment. It was never an easy situation for us. And I think that drove my incentive to want to be successful in medicine and particularly in business.
Well, I think what's so interesting is some people come from a background where they didn't have any money, right? And they really are driven in life to succeed financially because they never want to go back to where they started. Other people, which I would probably put myself and yourself in, for whatever reason, we just have a hunger to succeed. Not that we were starving or, you know, maybe it's just something we're proving to ourselves or our parents. You know, what would you say is that for you? What's given you that fire?
I love that comment. And I think you and I are the same. I really do. I knew I didn't want to stay as a, you know, a family doctor in Huntington. I knew I wanted to do a little more than that. I wanted to broaden my horizon. There weren't a lot of subspecialty surgeons that would match out of Huntington at that time. Most of the doctors, we had a class of about 30 or 40. Only one or two went into orthopedics. You know, I went into plastic and reconstructive. Most of them stayed in the community, had every intention of being there. And I think the drive, like you said, was more of a small town guy who really wanted to try to do something different and maybe push the boundaries a little bit of what's out there. I loved where I grew up, loved my family. I was very fortunate, but I kind of wanted to see bigger and brighter things. And that would be why I think it focused me more into the business side of medicine. But like you said, I wasn't starving by any means. I didn't have a silver spoon either, though. I mean, I didn't get a good start. I was basically, just like you said, I think I owed $166,000 in student loans when I took my first job. So, yes, sir.
I have to imagine back then that level of student loans had to be pretty high. I'm just thinking back to that time period.
Yes, sir. It really was. I mean, it was a big hit. And you know what I knew is that when I first started, you know, I did 4 years of medical school, which was a debt that I'd accumulated, 4 years in college, and then I did 5 years in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in surgery and surgery specialties, general surgery. Then I did plastic and reconstructive surgery. I was a resident then, but gosh, as you know, I think we made $22,000 a year as a resident back then. And, you know, you ate in the hospital and slept in the hospital. Yeah. Then I added another year. I did my seventh year as a hand fellow in Phoenix, Arizona. So by the time I could really make I got my first real job, I had been a seven-year resident and I had student debt from medical school and college. And, you know, you don't make enough to make any payments. I think they called it deferred. You could defer them as long as you were educating. And so I think we just made the minimum payment because that's all you could afford.
Well, interest rates back then were sky high too. I mean,
oh my goodness. 18%. Yes, exactly. Well, absolutely. Yes, sir. So credit cards were 18 to 19% too. Exactly.
So how'd you work out of that? Walk us through that, Dr. George.
Well, I took a job and here's what I did. And maybe it's some good advice for young people starting out because it sure did well for me. What I did is in my mind and with my wife, I was married at the time when I got my first job. We had our oldest who was two at the time when I started, and we had a brand new baby. So I have two daughters. When I first took my first job, which was in New Orleans here as a hand surgeon, I think it was probably 95. And I thought, well, look, we've been making $23,000 to $28,000 a year. And now I'm going to make, I believe it was $160,000. So for me, I went from making nothing to this number that was beyond my wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what if I just jumped my lifestyle a little bit? And not to the lifestyle of what I'm earning. So instead of living on that salary, I decided I would live on it was a better life for me, but I wasn't going to live the life of that salary. And so what I did was I went from 23 to paying myself or making roughly 40 or 50,000. And I started putting away the money to pay off those loans.
Wonderful.
And it really worked great for me, because what I did was I even worked out a deal with the place that I had worked, that they took it out of my check so that, you know, I didn't see it. And, you know, I think that's part of a mindset too, is that instead of taking the money, taking it home, looking at it and then saying, okay, I'll write a check to this bank. Yes. It was a lot easier to say, this is what I've got left. And I mean, you know that world much better than I do, but I think there's some psyche, wouldn't you agree, to having it taken away from you before you get it. Yes. It makes it easier to make the payments.
It does. It does. No, I agree with you. It's out of sight, out of mind. I think that's great advice for those of us that have student loans still today. You know, maybe that could be something that an employer helps you out with. And it's worth asking the question. Maybe a lot of hospital systems wouldn't, but gosh, if someone could, I think that would help out a lot of people.
Well, you know, I did it. Now that I have a hand center, when we hired a couple new partners, one of the newer doctors, I said, listen, I'll tell you what we'll do. This is your salary today. And I said, if you have a debt service, I will be happy to arrange to pay off that debt and compensate you to this level based on your debt. We can do it over a 2-year period. We can do it over a 3-year period, or if you want a lump sum. And I believe one of the doctors that worked for me agreed to that. And actually, it was a win-win for him. So the company was able to do it. He went from a salary that was where he was to double probably. And then the year or two later, it was 4 times that. So, and was debt free.
So this is great. What a great way to force yourself to save. So walk me through now. You mentioned about founding the hand center. And then I mentioned in the introduction that you're CEO of a hospital and you're chairman of another surgical center. Walk us through
sure.
This part of the journey where you're still living more or less like a resident. You've paid off your student debt. Where did the private practice and all of these other medical related things come into your career?
Well, I'll tell you, here's what I would say, the kind of pattern that hit the situation for me. And that was when I first started into practice, I knew I didn't want to be in debt, but I really think that this probably, if I can give one pearl of advice to anybody that's listening to a 60-year-old man that may have had some success, but I will tell you that I wanted to be the absolute best doctor I could be. And I really wanted to be known as a good physician. I wanted to make myself available as a good physician. I didn't want to turn away any business. I took call at as many facilities that I could. I kept different hours. As many, you know, I would come in early and work late. And what I realized, the biggest barrier to seeing high volume of patients and seeing more patients was not necessarily the physician's work ethic, but it was the systems that were in place that made it tough for us to get more people in to see us. And so I spent probably the first 5 years or so in the practice. I was with another individual who was a hand surgeon. It was just the two of us. And he was a really wonderful man and a good surgeon, but he was from the old school where you hand wrote all of your notes and you walked down the hallway to fill out the papers, and the person would come in and you'd ask them all these questions. And in no matter how hard you work, you were good if you could see 10 patients in a day because the paperwork and the inefficiency of things. And so what I realized is if you want to see more people and you want to meet more people and you want to work on more people, we have to really figure out a way to make this traffic flow a much more efficient way. So I would say, Dave, the first part of my career I spent on kind of remodeling the way our office did things. And my partner was really open to it because he was much older than I was. And he was like, wow, if you can see more doing it that way, I'm all in favor of it. So we started at doing registration, pre-registration. We started doing a lot of the stuff we could do before the patients got there. We switched to a dictation system instead of handwriting notes. We dictated in front of the patients, which saved you the time of explaining it to the patient and then explaining it in the chart. And quickly, we went from the ability to see 10 or 12 in a day for me to be able to see 30, 40. And now sometimes we see 80 or 90 patients, one physician can in a day at the level we are today. But I spent a lot of time on efficiencies.
And so that definitely helped. When did the Omega Hospital come into play and being CEO?
Yes, sir. Yeah, here's what happened. It's really, so for that first 7 years, I really focused on trying to be interested in trying to be the best physician. In other words, get out there, see as many patients, take call in as many facilities that you possibly can, and be known as a well-known hand surgeon who's not afraid to help anybody or likes to work. And I realized that after we got the office system moving pretty well, that some of the hospital facilities had that same bureaucratic red tape that prevented us from either booking cases or adding on cases or doing surgery because of the log jams in the system. And so there was a small hospital in town that a group that they had developed that was not doing well. And in 2006, a physician reached out to me and said that he and some other doctors were thinking about moving and wanting to do the physician-owned hospital. They asked me if I would be interested in coming over and working there. And I started working there in 2006, and I said, this has great potential. And I can see where we could bring in a large group of doctors and maybe make this thing run with a little bit more timely fashion instead of a lot of the bureaucratic red tape. And so in 2006, I put together a group of about 12 or 13 docs that I thought were all kind of the shakers and movers in the community. We had breast surgeons, we had orthopedic surgeons, we had spine surgeons. Mm-hmm. I was kind of the chairman as a hand surgeon. And these subspecialties were all working out of one hospital. It was a small hospital and we had five rooms, but we had, ORs, but we had about 18 or 20 patient rooms. And we were able to move patients through as pretty much outpatient surgeries. And we were really successful with that.
So was this a hospital that you guys kind of bought out, or did you start from scratch?
No, great question. Here's what it was. A physician had built the hospital. He was an OBGYN doctor, and it just didn't work well for him. He had one other partner. He saw the vision of if you owned your own hospital, you could do more with your own schedule. You could control when your start times are. So he had that great vision. He just didn't have a lot of volume in order to make it successful. In other words, I think he had the great vision, but he didn't have the patient population or the patient volume to drive it. In other words, did he have enough cases to do every week? And the answer is no. But I, on the other hand, had a really busy practice, and the rate limiting step for me in order to do the surgeries were I would contact the big hospital and they'd say, no, you can come at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We can give you, one room at 3. You can add on one tomorrow, but then we have someone else coming in at 10. And so I spent my whole days working in nights, working in evenings, trying to find OR time to take care of our patients. And this was a win-win for me. And that was a big concern for all of us down here. We were like, wow, we've got all these cases that we want to do. And the patients wanted it done, and we had to fight to find a place to do it. And so this created this opportunity for me. And so what I did was I basically set up an option to buy the hospital for him if we were successful. So what we did was a 6-month working trial. I brought in a group of doctors, Some of them were the ones we wanted to keep. Some of them were not. And then we went down to a local bank and said, would you loan us some money? We'd like to buy this hospital, and here's our 6-month working trial. And the numbers looked really good to the bankers. And they said, well, if these are the people that are staying in, this looks pretty good. Mm. And so that's what we did. And we bought the hospital, and it was an amazing time, because that's when reimbursement was really good for surgery and outpatient surgeries. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely lucrative.
And so is that something you still are part owner of today, or have you sold off that asset now at this point?
Nope, I still own it. I still own it today. It's a different game today. It's a lot more, we're a much more higher volume facility with lower reimbursements. You know, mm-hmm. back then there was a much higher reimbursement. I mean, I think in 1 year, maybe 2007, we distributed amongst 12 or 13 doctors, $30-35 million.
Wow.
Today, yeah, I mean, you can imagine that back in 2007. I mean, we did better than the big giant hospitals, because we had the racehorse physicians, we had good turnovers, and we were efficient. Today, as you know, it's more in-network, and there's a very small margin, so you had to make it work. You have to do still a fair amount of volume, but it's very successful still today, and we have a much bigger group of physicians. But yes, sir, still own the asset. We've refinanced the company several times and changed physicians, but yes, sir, it's been a great investment for me.
Well, that kind of leads to the next part of your life is founding the ERG Enterprises, which invests in a lot of real estate, from what I understand about it. So walk us through kind of this is a lot of stuff. So were you doing both at the same time? You know, what year were you starting? Because you said 2006, you got into Omega and things were just cranking along. At what point did you get into the real estate side?
Well, I mean, just like I said, you know, I founded, you know, in 2006, which was after the Hurricane Katrina, we had Omega. Omega was giving us some additional cash flow, and Hurricane Katrina had just ravaged our community. And everywhere you look, there was dilapidated structures, damage that needed repair. That meant there was really a significant opportunity for investment. Personally, I knew that New Orleans could return from Hurricane Katrina better and stronger than before, and then I knew it would require people willing to invest and to develop it. And the government was offering some great tax credits. I mentioned earlier that it's, you know, I felt like, you know, I knew healthcare, and I would highly recommend to all of your people today that invest in something you know initially,
yes.
Because it's the medicine business that we know.
Yes.
But I saw where hospitality and medicine kind of dovetail, and I was able to use some of my knowledge of the hospital and hospitality to get involved in hospitality. So I founded the ERG Enterprises. I had a wealth of contacts that I had met, many patients that I had worked with, and I actually befriended one really successful developer here in this community. And I would say my first real investment outside of the healthcare, which was Omega and my practice and the ambulatory surgery center, was after Hurricane Katrina. We bought the Windsor Court Hotel, which is still a crown jewel of New Orleans today. And I started with the ERG team, and we put together a group of people that I knew I could trust. And I think it's really about building a successful team. And I have some really great people, and we started looking at some different projects, and really worked out great for us.
And tell me about your time, you know, as something that I know I have struggled with. We were talking pre-chat about how I have the land business and my regular day job. And I actually have another one I didn't tell you about. How are you juggling time during the last, you know, 12, 13 years? What does that look like?
Well, I think you and I talked about it earlier on, and I think every person that's listening on this on your podcast today clearly understands that medicine, as in, is absolutely draining. I mean, it consumes, if you want to be good at it, it consumes all your time and attention such that it's really hard to oversee decisions that need to be made. And I think, nor should you. Instead of, you really have to be able to concede control and empower someone to help you make some of those decisions on your behalf. And only people who will make the best decisions that are in the interest of those people you can trust and who are experts in that business. And I think too often I see physicians either invest in someone they can't trust or that person takes advantage of them. So physicians investing in someone and then try to control the direction of the business is also an absolute formula for failure. And that's because many physicians say simply, you know, they don't have the time and the capacity to run the business successfully themselves. Chances are they don't really understand the business, but they say, hey, I'm a really great surgeon. I graduated from one of these pinnacle education places, so I know this. But the truth is, if you want to buy land, you want to talk to someone who does this for a living. I mean, someone who's you can trust, who knows the land business. And I'm not saying a physician can't learn to be a developer and buy land and become good at that. They're well-educated people. It's the time and the expertise, in my opinion. So I think one thing you have to do is be able to listen to the people that do it and not think you know more than they do. I mean, most of the partners that I have really reached the pinnacles of their disciplines, and those are the people that I have to rely on. If we're going to buy a hotel, I've partnered with many of the best hoteliers in the city, people who've developed hotels and done it all their life. And you have to be willing to listen to them. Don't you agree, Dave?
Yeah, well, I think it's a tough line to balance, because on one hand you don't have all the time in the world, but as you said earlier, you have to understand it yourself.
And correct,
I think you have to understand it yourself first before you can start delegating, and that means you have to have some experience in it. And I think that's where a lot of people really fall short, is they maybe get to have someone that they know and they trust, and they don't understand about how it works. They don't know the questions to ask. And maybe it's just sometimes you just have to have the experience and fall flat on your face a few times before you can know the questions as you're delegating stuff. But that's why I'm personally so passionate about entrepreneurship and physicians being entrepreneurs, because you're in it and you know it. Like you said, I think you gave some wonderful advice earlier about
it. I absolutely tell you, this has been, and I actually even talk about in the book, and I think that when you first start off in investment, I really think that you should definitely be involved in something that you know. And I know all the MBA schools say, oh no, you can't go beyond that, but you can. But I think that's a step that's further down the road. And I think that if you know your world of medicine, and most doctors do, they know how it works, you have to know the entire system in order to make it better for you or understand. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that you really, and if you look at all the things I did early on in my career, were all medically based. Hospital, ambulatory surgery center, medical practices, anything that I really felt comfortable with. And it wasn't until further along in my career did I delve into more hospitality. But by that point, I had a better understanding of that business.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly you weren't putting all of your eggs into that one basket. You know, it was just another place with which to grow your wealth. Obviously, the hospital was doing great, your practice was doing great, and it was something where if you did fall flat on your face, it wasn't going to kill you at all.
That's right. That's exactly right. And today, the ERG Enterprises is really diversified. And, I would tell you that the way we do things today is we have a team of people that look at different projects. They look at different assets. You know, those people run all the spec sheets, all the information, and then we sit down at a board level and look at some of the things that we're going to invest in. And it's a very diversified portfolio for that very same reason. Just like you said, we don't want to put everything in hospitality. We don't want to put everything in oil and gas. We have a pretty diverse portfolio, which allows us to make some mistakes along the way, and if the market is not doing well for a couple years in one area, then they tend to pick back up. But I say stay within your knowledge base early on, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. I think that is really, really great advice. That's why I often talk about surgery centers, you know, buying the surgery center or being a partner in a surgery center for people in private practice. But we're running out of time, and I definitely want to give you the chance to talk about your book, It's the Me Mindset, Change the World. So I did glance through it. I didn't have the chance to read it. It did seem like there's just a lot of stories in the book. So tell us about the book.
Well, thank you. I mean, here's what I would say. We is a book about really embracing human connectivity as a way to live a more fulfilling life. And I tell you, your audience, and it sounds like your experience with physicians, you've met a lot of people who really have that warmth in their heart. It's really based, the book is really based on my belief that when we orient our lives around other people and make them our primary focus, I think it makes you happier and healthier and more successful as a result. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sound like some guru who's saying this is my mission in life to say that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that if you embrace the me mindset of we versus me, you're really able to build that network that we've been talking about, people who you can trust and you genuinely care for, and that's because you care for them. The book talks a little bit about that success in life that doesn't happen when you make someone lose or when you try to get there alone. It only comes from embracing collaboration and really seeking to achieve while helping others do the same. It's really helped me, and I think early on in business, I saw where a lot of people felt you had to actually cream or crush the individual in order to come up on top. And the truth is, if you work with those people, there's a lot of synergies that can really build other business models, and it's been a much more nice way to move forward in life. And
well, I really think physicians understand that better than many professions, where, you know, you have the general physician, the primary care physician, and then you have specialists, right? I mean, you're used to working with one another. And that's why I think physicians could really relate well to this book written by yourself.
So, well, thank you so much.
Can people find it on Amazon, or where can they?
They can find it on Amazon. Yes, sir. They really can. It's We Ditch the Mindset. I was really fortunate. I had a really nice, really well-known publisher reach out to me, and they were trying to get a message out there. And I had these thoughts, and, you know, I think today more than ever, we need some unity and collaboration and compassion and all the ingredients of success that seems absent today. And I thought it would be a really nice, it tells some anecdotal stories, some of the things we talked about today, which is kind of nice for physicians to hear the stories of in the office when you meet this patient or get involved in that. It talks a little bit about the situation down here with Hurricane Katrina. But at the end of the day, the mindset, I believe, can change the world. As the subtitle states, my hope is that this awareness will lead to change. And that is, we can all work together. Like you said, doctors working with each other are really good about understanding that.
Mm-hmm. So what's next? What's on your plate? Are you going to retire one day, or you're going to keep working because you love everything you do?
I think I really love it. And I tell you, we have a lot going on at ERG right now. At the start of the year, we just acquired a big building downtown called the United Fruit Company. It used to be old Chiquita Bananas headquarters. Mm-hmm. It's located right in the Central Business District. So it's really, it's right on St. Charles. And we're trying to do a little development there. Friday, we're opening, I own a theater in town called the Orpheum Theater. And we just finished, I have a great team of people that put together a little speakeasy in the basement.
Oh, how fun.
So Friday night, we're having our grand opening at a speakeasy called the Double Dealer. And then we're still in the process of developing a couple of hotels. We have one in Nashville, and then we're doing one here in New Orleans. So I'm really excited. I like to do the part that we're doing today. So I've got a conference hosted by a Gallup organization, and it's focusing on business. And I'm getting to had an opportunity to sit on a panel with them in the next couple of weeks. So I like you said, and it sounds like the same guy you are. I like to stay busy, right?
Yes. Well, I think what's interesting about your career and what I'm taking away from the conversation is, in order to keep advancing, you know, you keep on learning new things and you try it. You know, you're not just reading the book. You know, you're really getting your hands dirty and continuing to expand in terms of who you are as a person and not just being defined by being a physician. What's your take? I'm curious, you know, what are some of the lessons you think we can take away from the conversation?
I could not agree with you more. I really do. I think that one comment that you made, and I really think we ought to really reiterate that, and that is you really have to know the business. You really have to learn it. And what's great about physicians is they really have an innate intelligence. They really do. They to make it through medical school and make it through residency and take all those tests. I mean, you can understand, in my opinion, the majority of people can understand the business. But the problem is if you don't find those details, if you don't learn from someone, and you have to be willing to listen to what they say and their expertise, because many people have fallen on their way. And I love your idea of rolling up your sleeves and getting involved in it. And I think you really have to do that. And I think it'll really make them happier. And I think it also helps you become a better physician, because people are people. And when they come to see me, you know, they'll say, hey, yeah, Dr. George, my carpal tunnel is doing great. I saw where you opened this little club down in the Orpheum. I think I'm going to come and check out your, and it, you know what I mean? It just adds to a happier and healthier life with everybody. So I think people share in the successes. And I think most people really like to work with physicians. And I love your comment about learn it, get your hands dirty and experience. We all know that everybody makes mistakes along the way, and I've sure had my share of those. So,
well, I would love to wrap up the conversation today just with thanking you so much for being with us. And if people want to reach out to you or if they have any questions, what would be the best way to do that, my friend?
I would love that. I would be available 24/7 for anybody that I can help or assist along the way. Probably the best way to handle that is we have a website that is, and I'll give you the actual website. It's Todd Stansfield. He's one of my, really a super guy who's been with us for a long time, and he would coordinate any, it's Todd T. Stansfield, STANSFIELD at ergenterprises.net.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, Dr. George, so much for being here with me, and I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone thinks about the podcast.
Well, Mr. Dennison, I want to tell you, thank you for what you're doing for us as the physician that's out there listening to you on a regular basis. I want to tell you, I on behalf of all of us, and I don't know if you get a chance to hear this, but we thank you for what you're doing for us, helping to educate us and taking care of us.
Oh, it's my honor. Well, my friends, that wraps up the episode for today. So definitely check out Dr. George and everything that he's doing. And if you have any questions, comments, please send them to me at dave@drfreedompodcast.com. And well, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated life.